You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat DeVilla. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry.
How's it going, Pat?
Excellent. It's been far too long since we've actually done a show.
Oh, it has. It has. What was it, February 28th, I think, was the last
one. Don't remind me, man. We actually got some emails and some posts.
It's been crazy.
People saying, where the hell you been?
Right.
Well, I've been busy. Work's crazy. You know, got family life stuff. Just life in general. But we're here. I'm recording the show.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a while.
Yep.
What's going on within the myth world for you, Dan?
Not a whole lot. I've just been kind of holding off on rebuilding my main machine. So I got a couple other pieces that I'm looking to get. Hopefully one of them is going to be the HD Home Run Prime. But other than that, you know, I'm waiting off on that so I can rebuild my machine. And hopefully make it even better. Put the latest version on it and do some other stuff with some SSDs and some other hard disks. I did put a QNAP box in, much like yourself, and so I have everything kind of being shared off of that thing for now. There's four 1 terabyte drives and a RAID 6 configuration inside of that box. And that all kind of stemmed from my main desktop dying on me, and I just said, screw this for the time being. I'll just run with this and just use my work laptop, which runs Linux as well, for all the rest of my stuff, my development efforts, my work stuff, all that kind of stuff, just general browsing, that type of stuff. So I've been running one of those boxes here, and I've been waiting to upgrade the main desktop and hence upgrade the Myth front end as well.
Yeah, I've been in a holding pattern myself too. I haven't upgraded to the latest MythBond 2, and I haven't upgraded to 0.24 yet. And to be honest, there hasn't been any real reason to upgrade with my current configuration setup. So I stayed pat, and everything's been running okay, no problems or whatever. I took a look at when I did my last build, and honestly, the current hardware that I have in my main box, it's been 4 years already. Yeah. So I'm running a dual core AMD system, two gigahertz, and with a terabyte drive in there. I mean, I have updated little things here and there, like I updated the video card a couple 2 years ago, and I got a bigger hard drive 2 years ago when I went all digital. That was the time when I got the HD Home Run, when I got the PVR 1212, and since then nothing's changed. But what I figured was, I think it was time to update my system hardware, my main box a little bit. So I spoke to you and I looked around a little bit, and I picked up some parts. I got a new motherboard. I got an Asus motherboard, and I got a quad core AMD 3.2 gigahertz processor. So they came in this week. I haven't had a chance to put it all together, but it's ready to go. And I have an SSD in my front end, and I've been really happy with that, how that's been running with that. So, and also speaking to you, I made the decision that I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to run an SSD in my main box to house the operating system, and that's what I did. I picked up an OCZ SSD hard drive, 64 gig hard drive.
Right.
And so that's going to be where my operating system is going to be, and what I'm going to do is the 1 terabyte drive is just going to be strictly for recordings. So it's going to be a mixed environment setup. I think you get the best of both worlds. You get the speed of the SSD for the operating system and everything in between when you're doing updates and just the system stuff running, and you got a nice big decent sized drive. Now I could have went and got a bigger, a 2 terabyte drive or 1.5 terabyte drive, but honestly, the 1 terabyte drive has suited me pretty well since I've gone to all HD, and honestly, the most I've ever maxed out as far as recordings on there, I think I hit about 40% once. and I have her in the range of 25 to 40.
I'd have to agree. Yeah. I seem to be in that kind of range as well. If I make it to at most upper 400 gigabytes, something like that with recordings. I mean, I do a lot of kids shows and stuff like that, which really aren't HD, but the SD are they're really SD stuff. But the HD stuff that I do record never seems to exceed more than half that drive ever. Not that I've ever seen.
Yeah, my regular show recordings of TV shows that I watch, I usually watch them and I delete them right away. You know, the only time I keep something around
is
if I record maybe a movie, that I want to keep around, mm-hmm. or something like the kids want to watch and they want to keep around. And if that's the case, like if it's just like episodes of whatever kiddie show, I'll usually archive them, re-encode them. You know, sometimes I don't even do that if it's standard def stuff. You know,
yeah,
where the file sizes aren't too big and it's not that big of a deal. And like you said, I also have a QNAP, NAS, network attack storage device, and that's pretty nice. I haven't had any issues with that one, and I got all my archive stuff on there, my music, my photos, the home videos, mm-hmm. Plus some archive stuff on there. And the only thing I keep on my local drive on my MythBox is my recordings, pretty much.
Exactly. That's exactly how I have it set up, too.
Yeah, so basically what I'm going to do is my current family computer is getting a little long in the tooth, so what I planned to do was I picked up a spare case, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the guts out of the Myth system, and I'm going to put that into the new case for the new family computer, and then I'm going to throw the new guts into the current case that I have for my main Myth box, and I have a Cooler Master that I've had for a long time. It looks like AVC type box, like any other.
Yeah. Right,
almost like a tuner or whatnot. It kind of looks like that from a distance. So sure. I'm going to keep that. It's a nice case. And honestly, when you're building mid-TV systems, the most expensive piece that I find, it's not the processor, it's not the memory, it's not the hard drive, it's not the video card. It's the case. And I have a nice case that I've had for a number of years. And honestly, it's small. It still looks good. I'm going to keep that thing. So I'm just going to put the new motherboard in it with the new processor and the new memory. I'm going to take my old hard drive in there. I'm also going to put the SSD in there. And I should be good to go after that.
That sounds good. The one thing I can see about the case potentially being an issue is any, embedded, USB ports may not be compatible with that if that board that you bought has, USB 3 on it, which shouldn't really matter if the only thing you're really hooking up to it is, an IR receiver or something like that.
Yeah, exactly, for my remote or a keyboard, a wireless keyboard, that's about it. So it's not that big of a deal. And,
go ahead.
The PVR-1212 is also connected through the USB connection, so...
Right, and that does not take advantage of any USB 3 stuff. However, USB 3 is backwards compatible with USB 2, so
sure,
so you should be able to pop it into any one of those ports, no problem.
Yeah, so I'm holding. I got my equipment.
I was gonna say what about the cost here with the thing? Because I was talking to my brother and to my parents, and they were looking for me to build them a new Myth box here, and they're all concerned about how much something like this would cost. How much did you spend on hardware?
Well, if I didn't go for the SSD, I would have been around $350.
Around $350.
Yeah. Okay. So that's $350 not including a hard drive. So if you got a 1 terabyte, you can get a 1 terabyte for $70-$80. Around roughly.
Yeah.
You figure $80 for a 1 terabyte drive, and also the big thing is the case. We could talk about these AVC cases. I've seen some low end ones under 100, like 80 or so. I've seen some really fancy ones that get crazy, like $200-$300 range.
No. I've seen them upwards of like $700-$800.
That's ridiculous.
When I look, they have embedded touch panels and stuff like that in them, where you could have not the old VFD type stuff anymore. These are actual just little LCDs built right into them. Some people have gotten them to work with Myth, where it actually becomes a second interface and always remains the interface, aside from what the TV actually is displaying.
That could be useful to a degree.
You can get Yeah, it can be. Yeah, I mean, if you want to say you want to just shut the TV off and have a playlist playing, you know, you're playing music, you could see
right music that
the playlist is doing
exactly.
Yeah,
you don't need
that'd
the TV
be great. Or have it be just a slideshow. I mean, you know, for the you know while it's just sitting there kind of idling, just you know cycling through pictures or something like that. I mean, there's some things you could potentially do with that, but the cost of those things is just crazy right now, and I haven't looked in probably about a year or so, but the last time I checked, they were around $700-$800. So
yeah, I think my Cooler Master case,
it's not all that much.
I think at the time I paid around $80 for it. Now that case probably now probably being around the $150 range, which is not crazy.
Yeah,
you know, but it's still not cheap. You know. As long as
it would be nice to at some point to be able to put like some type of a display on it, you know, because so that, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, a lot of the home entertainment, you know, units don't have anymore is they don't have a clock anymore. So
yeah.
Some people, you know, I mean, I know everyone carries a phone on them and then all that kind of stuff, but a lot of people, you know, liked having, you know, the old VCR style, you know, there's always a clock there, you know.
I do like that.
Look at, you didn't have to have another clock anywhere else.
And the old cable boxes used to have like a digital clock they used to put on there. They don't do that anymore. In fact, most cable boxes don't even have a display on
there. The little standard def ones?
Even the high def ones.
Yeah, the standard def ones have nothing. Yeah. Oh, really? The new ones? Yeah.
The new one's got nothing on it. It's got a power light. That's about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They'd have nothing on there.
I don't have one of the latest ones, so I have to. Yeah.
Yeah, they'd have nothing on there. They're cheap boxes. You know, they work fine and all, but they're pretty. They try to keep the cost down with them. So big news since we talked last. Google TV bought Sage TV. Now, for people who don't know, Sage TV.
Yeah. How about that?
Is a commercial DVR system. That they have versions that run on Windows. They also have a version that runs on Linux. I don't think they have a Mac version, I don't think. Now, I tried to check this out on Linux, and just to see and compare, I was planning on writing an article for publishing, and I contacted the Sage TV people, and I said to them, you know, on your website, you have the Windows version available for free trial for 30 days, but you can't do that with the Linux version. I have to go out and pay for the Linux version. I'm like, listen, I want to write an article. I want to do a comparison of Sage TV to Myth TV and really see if this, you know, one's got any advantages over the other or not. And they never responded to me. So I'm not going to spend $80 on a piece of software that I might not even use.
Right.
And honestly, what I've seen of Sage TV, it doesn't look all that impressive to me.
Well, am I mistaken, but is it all Java-based?
Yeah, all the GUIs and all the front-end stuff is all Java-based, actually. I think they're running C or C++ in the background, but all the front-end and GUIs and everything, that's all Java-based.
So that kind of baffles me because I'm a Java developer by day, you know, and you know when it comes to stuff like that, you know, Java doesn't have the reputation of being like the fastest, you know, kid at the park here, you know. I mean, I wouldn't have expected something like Java to be the visual presentation of it because honestly, you know, from an application standpoint, it's always been kind of like. You know, I'd be interested to see what the UI framework they're using.
They're probably using something custom.
I
wouldn't surprise me.
It would have to be because by out of the box, you know, the Java toolkit, you know, window ink toolkit is it's just. I mean, it does its best to kind of fit in with the environment, but it's never something I'd say, wow, you know, look at that app. You know, I don't know. I've never seen a Sage TV interface. I imagine it has, you know, some similarities to Myth TV or Windows Media Center or something like that. But I guess I can also see, you know, part of it, you know, Google TV is Android and soon to be Android 3.1. I have one of the Logitech reviews and, you know, Android itself is Java based, and if Sage TV is you know already getting them there, then hey, by all means, you know, it could be an interesting development.
The only thing of Sage TV that jumped out at me that maybe differentiates it between Myth TV is they have these embedded front ends boxes that they sell for like $150-$100, you know, high def that do high def. That's actually pretty nice. If you, you know, all you got to do is plug the damn thing in, it works. So, you know, you have your main back-end system, and you just throw these front-end extenders around the house. That could be an advantage. You know, that could be nice. You know, you don't have to spend, you know, $150 is pretty reasonable if you get, you know, the full interface on each TV around the house. So that's pretty nice.
That's not that bad. Yeah.
Yeah, and it sounds like this is an active community around it. So it sounds like it's mostly Windows people, but there are some people that do run it on Linux. So I have never spoken to somebody who, you know, actually does that, but I'd be curious to hear what their experiences are and why they chose to do that.
Definitely. I'd be interested to do like a comparison. I mean, we tried doing this, me and Pat Archibald, we tried setting this up with the HT Media Centric podcast, which that has gone away. But we were trying to get together, you know, just a little round table on the pros and cons of all of them. And just to kind of see, but it unfortunately never materialized. I'd hope to try to get that back going at some point with, you know, a bunch of the people that were all involved.
Yeah, but back to the Google TV. It's interesting that they went out and did this, you know, because you hear about Google, how they do development. You know, a lot of the stuff they do is in-house, but they do sometimes go out and buy things wholesale and just take, you know, the whole kit and caboodle with them. You know, Android was like that. It was an independent company that Andy Rubin was running, and then they just went out and bought them, and he stayed there, you know, as the big, you know, the big head honcho of that. But it's interesting that they did that, and I'm curious to see where this leaves the current CHTV people that use it, what Google's plans are for the future. They haven't said any statements, you know, for or against what they want to do with it. It's interesting maybe they're going to bring some of the CHTV features into Google TV, or they're going to maybe just have it so that, you know, you can more tightly integrate it. Say, like, if you have a CHTV system and you want to connected to your Google TV, you know, have the Google TV as your front end. I'm curious to see where it goes. It's going to be interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not interesting for the CHTV people because they're sweating it right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, usually when Google does this, they tend to shut it down for, and I mean, look at something like Gizmo and stuff like that. They tend to shut it down for a period of time. And like Grand Central, when that became Google Voice, you know, I mean, that was, at one point, it was just locked. You could still use it if you were already a customer, but nobody new could get into it. So, I mean, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what they do with it. But I do have one of the Logitech review boxes. I signed up for their developer program, and they did send me one. Unfortunately, up until recently, the Android market has not been available on it. You're starting to see that you can select Google TV as a device once you deploy something into the Android market. Now, shortly, they are supposed to be getting Android 3.1, you know, and a much different interface and everything like that coming down to it. I've never had any problems with the box itself. I don't have it connected to a TV, I mean, to a tuner so that it's actually doing, you know, any type of, you know, TV recording, because all of my Myth, you know, my Myth backend handles a lot of that stuff. I more or less had it, you know, am using it for things like, you know, Amazon Video On Demand and Netflix, and there's a lot of, like, you know, internet-based apps that are all, they just have, like, their own little icon on there. Like, if you want to look at anything on Revision 3 or The Onion or, you know, anything like that, there are like, almost like little shortcut channels to a lot of those things. Likewise, Google Listen on Android, you know, on the Android phones for downloading podcasts, very similar to that. They don't actually have Google Listen on there, but very similar to that is the Google Queue, which allows you to go in and manage your downloaded videos right from inside of Google Reader if you use that.
That's pretty good.
It does have a lot of nice features. Oh, yeah, I really dig that. I'm kind of hoping that somebody like Miro can kind of, you know, hook into that so that you can just set it up somewhere like in your Google Reader and just read from a group that you set up in there, and you can always manage that. Like right now, I have the Miro Bridge set up on my Myth TV box, but in order to get anything into there, I have to, you know, remote into it and fire up the Miro client, or just, you know, fire it up over X, you know, an SSH tunnel and forwarding X over to this machine. But that's the only way I can get in there and manage it. If I could just say, hey, sync all of my stuff to my, you know, my my listings to my Google Reader account, for instance, that'd be great. I mean, then I never have to even go into that once I establish the Miro Bridge setup. That'd be something I think I would, you know, I would really be on board with. But they do have a lot of those features, and it worked really well. I'm not sure about, like I said, I'm not sure about how the TV viewing worked and how the guide worked and being able to, you know, pull up the, you know, say like the, like do a search like while I'm watching something, or I think you could do something like, what if you're watching something, it could search relevant stuff based upon what you're watching, that type of stuff. But for all the online stuff, I mean, it worked really, really great. So it does see like the MIF backend so that you could look at your recordings. However, it didn't know how to decode some of like the MPEG-2 stuff. It seemed to be able to do the MPEG-4 stuff, but any MPEG-2 recordings over UPnP, it didn't seem to be able to decode them.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Google TV thing, I think, to be honest, it's been a bit of a disappointment. I mean, I think Google had bigger aspirations for it, and I think they kind of thought that it was going to sell a lot more than what it did, and it really hasn't materialized yet. And to be honest, you know, you compare it to, like, Apple TV. Apple TV, for the longest time, languished, you know? It was kind of like, you know, the redheaded stepchild that they really didn't give two craps about. And
Right.
And it's only built a base that over, you know, a fairly long period of time. So I'm wondering if, you know, if Google TV can get anywhere near that. And maybe people were clamoring for some DVR functionality. And maybe that's why they went out and got Sage TV. They want to have more DVR-type setups, and maybe they want to improve the interface. I mean, how's the interface on the Google TV? I have not seen one personally. I mean, I just looked at some of the videos originally when it came out. So I haven't seen the current interface, what it looks like. How is that compared to, like, MIT TV or something else?
I think the interface does need some streamlining. For one, like if you're in an application, you can kind of jump back to the main screens, and you always tend to see that other application that was previously running behind you. So say I launch Pandora, then I go back and I want to, you know, if something's playing or it's even paused, and I go back and then I want to go look at Netflix, for instance. You'll see Pandora, in the background there, and there doesn't seem to be a clear way to, you know, switch between them. If you're just using the keyboard, you can always just do like Alt Tab, but the keyboard interface isn't. That's the only way that they give you to control that thing. It doesn't seem to be the best way to do it. I have a Harmony remote that I got for it, which was not easy to set up. To get it, I had no idea. I had to go into some settings menu and enable Harmony remotes to be active on that thing. I couldn't just say, you know, go into the Harmony interface on the machine, update the software on the remote itself and for Google TV, and then it just worked. And when I started Googling around for it, nothing ever indicated that I had to go into any settings and explicitly enable Harmony remotes to be active on that device. Once I finally found that, I said, "Oh, no kidding! Now I can finally do this." You know, the other nice remote, for it was the actual, you know, Google TV remote in the Android market, and that worked really, really well. I mean, even to the point where it gave you like a screen if you want to just draw around on it, and it actually moves the mouse around on the screen for you, which I think that is part of the problem that people have with it, is that they're seeing a mouse on the screen. Like, if you want to go through Amazon on demand to watch a movie or a TV show or something like that, you actually have to be moving up and down the screen, it's a web page. You have to highlight click the link of the video that you want to bring up, and then you have to move the mouse around to click it and actually purchase it. If I'm looking at the listings of the movies that are on there, tabbing from back and forth from one to another, or just using the directional arrow, you know, on the keyboard is not going to cut it. It doesn't, when you write a web page, it's not made for directional arrows to be moving up and down and left and right and stuff like that. There's a specific sequence in which, you know, anchor tags on a page, you know, get put in sequence so that you can, you know, move from them in a logical manner. You can't do that with a remote control. That just doesn't. It's not made for that type of an interface. So, I mean, I have the Harmony remote it allows me to jump back and forth between applications, but I still seem to have to pull out the keyboard if I want to buy something specifically on, say, Amazon on demand or just select a video. I mean, because they do a lot of free stuff now too. If you just want to select one, you still need to pull the keyboard out and use that to get it. So it is clumsy, and I don't think that solely using the keyboard is the way that everybody's going to want to sit there and use one of these devices. They're still going to want to reach for the remote control, sit back, you know, that 10-foot, you know, distance, you know, the 10-foot, what did they call that? You know what I mean? The
front-row
view of it or yeah, whatever, from the couch view, you know. They can, you're not going
to
want to sit there with a keyboard. Yeah, right. You're not going to want to sit there and do that with a keyboard.
No, you don't. You know, I have a Sony Blu-ray player, and it's got Netflix. I'm able to watch my Netflix through there. I'm able to watch Amazon Video On Demand. I'm able to watch Hulu Plus if I had a subscription to it. The Plus has a whole bunch of other stuff in there. I can watch all my it has Google in there, so I can watch, you know, YouTube. I can watch my YouTube subscriptions.
Sure.
I don't know if you use that or if other people use that, but I use it. I have video feeds that I want. I use that to aggregate my video feeds, and I'm able to access that through the Sony Blu-ray player. So that works pretty nicely.
Right.
You know, it's I've got my remote that I use, a Harmony, like you were saying, and it works fine. I mean, honestly, the Sony interface is nothing to write home about, but at least it's functional. With the Netflix stuff, originally when I got the Blu-ray player, the only thing that I could do is I would go into the Netflix entry, I would see my queue, my streaming queue, and I could, the only thing that I could do was just pick a movie to watch and then remove it from the queue after I was done. That's it. But they've updated it since then, and now I'm able to go in and browse categories. I could see my list, I can update them, I can add stuff to it. So it's a lot better than when I originally got it. They send updates out every few months, and you know, they tweak it and they improve it a little bit. Plus I got Pandora on there, there's Slacker Radio on there, so there's quite a bit of stuff on there for just a Blu-ray player. It's pretty nice. I mean, when I bought the thing, you know, the fact that it was a Blu-ray player was like secondary. I wanted the Netflix, and that's pretty much why I want it. You know, I mean, you could buy one of those Roku boxes, and you can get a low-end one for about $99 that does HD. But the one I would want would be a little more money. It would be like in the, I think it's like $140, $150. If I'm going to spend that much, I might as well just get a Blu-ray player. And that's what I did. I spent like, I think I paid, what did I pay, like $170 for my Blu-ray player. So for an extra $20, I got a Blu-ray player as compared to like a Roku box, you know, the better Roku box. So that's what I went with. And I use it, you know. The Netflix I use heavily. I've watched a ton of stuff on there. And, you know, we hear...
Oh, yeah, me too.
You know, and speaking of Netflix, we hear these rumblings that Google is going to have a Chromium plugin that will let you watch your Netflix stuff for Linux. You know, there's the whole question of DRM and, you know, those play nicely with Linux and whatnot. But it sounds like they're building a plugin that you'll be able to use it in a browser and basically watch your Netflix stuff. And I guess they're using HTML5. I mean, we heard stories of Netflix using HTML5 extensively and whatnot, but
a lot of that started with Sony. So what you're probably seeing on your Sony interface there for your Blu-ray player is probably that HTML5 interface.
Probably.
And if you've gone to Netflix lately, they've revamped the entire site. And I tell you what, it is pretty slick what they're doing. It doesn't work so well on my Android tablet. But I mean, not that I could play it, but I could at least browse it and should be able to view things. It's not available. It's not great for the touch interface there. Well, yeah, I can do it on my Droid X, but not on the Samsung Galaxy Tab. At least going to the website, you can't actually, if you click on something, it doesn't highlight.
That's getting away from it.
But the HTML5 interface is what's kind of driving all that. And Sony, I believe, was the first one on board to start pushing that out to the PlayStation 3s and I believe to all the Blu-ray players. The other fact here is that things like Silverlight are going away. You know, Microsoft isn't even doing a whole heck of a lot with it anymore. At least in the, you know, trying to compete with Flash and that type of stuff. That was what a lot of Netflix was all delivered on previously, and once they can start doing this all through HTML5 with the embedded video and audio tags and whatnot that are in there, that just changes everything. I mean, there should be no technical reason that they can't put it on any device that can handle the supported, you know, video codecs. I mean, it's all going to be driven right through the browser, and everything now has a browser. If you should theoretically be able to open up, say, your phone that supports, you know, like Android phones, for instance, support, you know, HTML5, you know, features, especially audio and video, and you should be able to push that, you know, content, whatever it happens to be, through that mechanism. Whether you write an app for it or not is beside the point. But if you have browser support, especially like the WebKit browsers and HTML5 support, you should be able to push that video out there to that platform, no matter what it is. And that's what's going to let them, you know, Google and Chrome, you know, bring it, you know, to us on Linux.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the Android Netflix application. They rolled it out, and it's only on a handful of phones. But my phone wasn't on the initial list. I have the MyTouch 4G, and so it doesn't play. Like I have it installed, and I'll try to start a movie. I'll get like a black screen, and I'll get like 2 seconds of audio. Okay, but my tablet, oh, yeah. I have a ViewSonic G tablet. I threw CyanogenMod on there, and I have the nightlies on there. I installed the Netflix app on there, and it plays perfectly well. I can watch stuff there, and it works no problems whatsoever. So.
Yeah.
That's not...
Yeah, the Droid X was recently added to this supported list, and I tried it out. I was watching an episode of Firefly the other night. It came across fine. I was sitting on my deck with it in my hands watching Firefly. So, and that was all over 3G and everything. I didn't have the Wi-Fi turned on.
Yeah, that's not using Silverlight. Absolutely, that is not using Silverlight. That's using,
no,
that's
not.
Using HTML5, and it's just pushing it over. So... You know,
I don't know if the Android app, because it has native support for, you know, the streaming the MPEG-4, you know, and 3GP videos and whatnot. So it could theoretically just be built in, you know, with whatever, you know, DRM they have in place, but built on top of the existing framework.
I don't think Silverlight's in there.
No. The existing Android framework is what I'm talking about. For coding, I mean, it's all just, you know, Java-based, you know, calls to be able to open a stream. And if they just extended, you know, those classes that do that to include their own types of DRM, it could all just be native, you know, right?
It is native, and they have their own DRM in place. So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but
and they have to appease the movie, you know, production companies and stuff like that.
But it's encouraging that, you know, Google's going to be doing a plugin for a browser. You know, conceivably, this could be extended to Myth too. You know, you just fire up your video player and you got an entry for Netflix. You go in your credentials, you log in, and you see all your stuff, and you start to stream.
And I imagine a plugin would be in the works to make that a lot more streamlined.
You know, if the browser plugin does come through, that's only a matter of time till that happens.
Exactly.
So, hopefully it happens. You know, they were talking about it. We'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because that pisses me off that, you know, you would be required to have Silverlight running on your machine to be able to watch Netflix. It's ludicrous.
Right.
There's absolutely no reason for it.
Nope. Nothing technical.
Nothing technical, exactly. It's all political.
Yeah.
But it's good stuff.
Yeah, it is.
As far as new hardware coming down, we're all pretty excited for the HD Home Run Prime. And what this device is, it's similar to the old HD Home Run, except that it does cable card. And now... basically what it is, it'll be like a network recording device, and it supposedly works with Myth 24, so it should work from day one if you got Myth 24 installed. So it's on pre-order over on Newegg, and it's supposedly going to be shipping the end of July. So, you know, a lot of people are excited about it. I got mine on pre-order. I can't wait. I'm curious. The thing that concerns me the most is dealing with the cable company. I'm curious to see how it's going to play out, you know?
Good evening. This is Nick from Silicon Dust.
Hey, Nick. How are you? This is Pat, and also got Dan with me.
Hi.
How you doing, Nick?
Good, thanks. My apologies. I lost track of time. Very good to try to catch you.
That's good. I'm glad you made it. In fact, we were just talking about the HD Home Run Prime right now. It's funny you jumped in while we were talking about it. So with us is Nick Kelsey from Silicon Dust. He's the founder and CTO. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So Nick, can you give us a little history of the company, your involvement, and what you guys do?
Sure. The HGM Run was formally released early 2007. It was initially targeted for Myth TV. The time there weren't many options for ATSC tuners for Linux. So the HGM Run came out of a need to get ATSC into Myth TV. And Network Attach, my background is with network protocols, embedded systems, and network seems as a logical interface for TV viewing. We've seen that with Myth TV has this model with multiple backends, multiple clients. It pairs with other DPR applications. The idea was similar to a network printer, network tuner, any computer can watch TV.
And it's a great device. I have it. I've had it for several years now, and I've had zero issues with it. Once you have it set up and recording off of it, zero problems. Excellent device. Been very happy with it.
Mine's been running. Geez, I think it's a year and a half now, and it just sits there under a dresser. It just chugs along doing its thing and sends everything to the back end.
So I have a question, Nick. You guys are mostly Linux guys as far as your development environment. What do you guys use?
We're pretty mixed. Obviously, we support the BDA system under Windows, and very focused on cross-platform, being the tuner shouldn't have any limitation or awareness as to what it's talking to. So from a low-level point of view, we support Windows, OS X, Linux, Solaris, and the different BSD variations, both big endian, little endian, both 32-bit, 64-bit. So our standard QA on the low-level command line includes all of those targets. Development, we have a mix mostly of Windows and Linux machines. Windows for where we're targeting Windows platforms, and then Linux for when most of our QA and other aspects.
Well, it makes sense you have a mixed environment, because obviously you want to sell as many of these devices as possible, so you want to run it on every platform and supported in as many applications as possible. So let me ask you, what percentages of users are on different platforms? Do you guys have an idea?
Vaguely from web browser information. I don't have the latest numbers in front of me. It's dominated by Windows. Windows Media Center has taken a good chunk of the DVR market for Windows. Certainly have a pretty good showing for Myth TV, Linux people as well. We try to maintain good support working with the Myth TV guys. We have we're part of the bug track system from Myth TV, so that bugs can be filed against us. We try to most of our focus would be on Myth TV and on Windows.
One of the nice things I like about your website is you can go in there and plug in your zip code, and it'll come back and ask you, what are you doing over the air? Are you doing cable? Are you doing satellite? And basically, you can see, what you can watch in your area. It's very helpful tool to use. I've gone there and I've used it, and I can see all the channels that I can get for over the air or through the different cable companies. Are you planning to do something similar with the HD Home Run Prime?
We are. Right now, the website will show you all the unencrypted channels. With cable card, you have one more intermediate level. You've got access-controlled copy freely, which will work with Myth TV. So we would like to be tracking those channels. That's going to be, not sure whether that will be online in time for the product release, but it'll be pretty close.
Now, you talk about copy protection, encryption, what the different cable companies do. I know you guys had a hard time getting, well, I don't know if it was a hard time. I'm putting words in your mouth, but you guys definitely had to do some work to get this approved, correct? To be able to make it play nice and everybody signs off on it?
Yes. Yeah, there's quite a lot to the certification process. And we've been working hard to keep the classification of the video such that if we're allowed to send it unencrypted, then we do send it unencrypted.
Now as far as support and say Windows Media, does that support the encrypted piece?
Windows Media Center, so Windows 7 Media Center, yes, that supports copy-protected content. On cable, you have three types of content. You have unencrypted content, which is what you'd get with a clear cram tuner like the normal home run. You have access-controlled copy freely. Access-controlled means that it's encrypted on the cable system, and copy freely means that the protection flags are not flagging it as needing end-to-end protection. And then you have the access-controlled copy-protected, which is where it's a complete protected path, being it needs to be encrypted on the hard drive and it needs to be protected by the system that it's being stored on. So varies between cable companies, but all of the ClearQuam unencrypted channels will work, and all of the access-controlled copy-freely will work on all platforms. And then for access-controlled, copy-protected, is where Windows 7 Media Center is needed.
As always, you know, it's going to vary from cable provider to cable provider, what level of encryption that they have and what's open. So I'm sure once the HD Home Run Prime is released and people start getting, you know, cable cards in there, there'll be a flurry of activity, people reporting what they can get with it.
Yeah, we've seen quite a range. Locally for us, pretty much everything is access-controlled copy-freely. It's not until you get to the HBO, Showtime, Cinemax class of channels that they become copy-protected. We've seen other cable companies with some of our testers, which have, where things have been a lot more restrictive. So it's, at the moment, it's hard to predict. We'll have a much better idea once people are using the product.
Let me ask you, can you explain a little bit of how the device works with cable cards? Is it a virtual network device? How does everything play with that?
From the PC's point of view, it's very similar to the existing home run, being you have discovery protocol, you have the commands you can send it to request it to tune a channel, and then it will stream back the video stream. The key new feature which we gain by having cable cards in addition to the content is we have the full channel information. So the HD Home Run Prime knows all the virtual channel numbers, all the channel names. So when the DVR application wants to, for example, tune channel 69, then it sends 69 to the Home Run Prime, which will stream back that virtual channel. So say there's no channel scan involved when you're using cable card.
So let me ask you: have you guys
written? That'll be really nice. That'll be nice to start getting away from that.
Have you guys written any utilities where
no naming and matching channels?
Do you guys?
Say that again.
No channel scan and no having to manually match the name.
I have a question for you, Nick.
Is there,
do you guys have any utilities written so that there's a way to quickly see what channels have different levels of copy protection and what the flags are set at?
That is not that's not directly published by the cable company. So the technological measure to do that is there's a get entitlement request that can be sent to the Prime. It's on a per-channel basis. Essentially, we have to request that the card, we have to tune the channel, we have to request that the card decrypt that channel, then the card will come back and tell us what whether it's authorized or not and what the protection is. So it's essentially you have to check every channel from a, the... we can't really get away from that. It's a bit like the if when you've got a set-top box, if you change to a channel you're not subscribed to, the channel's still there in its database of channels. It'll still come up with the... It'll still identify the channel. And then for the picture, it will then work out that it's not subscribed and display a little pop-up. So it's similar here that the list of channels we get from the cable card include all the channels, even if they're not subscribed. You have to check each one in order to work out what the protection is and what the access control is.
Right. I have a Motorola Hi-Def box, and I can go into the service menu, and then I can go from channel to channel, and through the service menu, I can see what the flags are set on each channel. It's very tedious because you got to go from, you know, channel to channel in the service menu and look at them.
Yeah, so it certainly can be scripted on the cable on the Home Run Prime to do that. Being if you request entitlement on each channel, iterate through all the channels, then you'll build up that information. That is it will take a little while because it has to request each channel individually from the card.
Let me ask you, with the HD Home Run, you guys have a very nice application for Linux that has a nice GUI where you can go in and look at the different channels they have listed. It pulls up VLC, and then you can watch at different frequencies. And you can go in and you can do firmware updates on it. Are you guys looking to update that application, or are you writing something more up to date?
So that will continue to work with Home Run Prime. There is... we do have a, in fact, I think the, so we do have an update to that that adds the ability to tune my virtual channel number, but you can use the same principle. You can select any channel with Prime, any frequency, it will identify all the channels. The big difference you'll see, two big differences. First is that instead of getting a list of unnamed channels, it will name all the channels for you. And the second is, if you pick a channel that's encrypted, but it's access controlled copy freely, then when you click the view button, it will request the channel and become no longer encrypted. So if you're used to looking at a cable system where all the channels show up as encrypted, click the view button. If it's allowed to, then it will stream it unencrypted.
I have a couple of questions from the MIT TV users mailing list. Will the HD Home Run Prime give any access to the out-of-bound tuner, which has the guide information? You know, would there be a possibility of accessing guide information through the Prime or not?
Channel listing, yes. Guide, no. We don't get guide information from the out-of-band channel through the cable card. It's actually the cable card that demodulates the out-of-band. We get the data that filters through the card. So we get the list of channels and how to tune all the channels, but not which is available then for an external application. But we don't get the guide information as to what's coming up in the next few hours or days.
Another question from the MIT TV users mailing list. Will we be able to get programmatic access to the channel mapping between the virtual channel number used by the Prime with the card installed and the frequencies and program IDs needed to tune traditional clear QAM tuners such as the original HD Home Run?
Yes, there are two mechanisms. One is that an application can register for a UPnP event to get all of the raw tables from that are being delivered from out of band. That's part of the DRI standard. The second mechanism is that if you tune a channel, then you can read back what frequency and program number it was from either through the UPnP mechanism or through one of the other access protocols.
Another question is, has Silicon Dusk ever considered producing a set-top box that you can hook up to a TV so that, you know, you can do your recordings and also watch them directly to a TV?
That's an interesting question. A rendering box is something many people have tried them. They're hard to do really well. But it's certainly been something we've had many discussions on. It's something that is difficult to really do well because it's quite dependent on the DVR application that backs it. If you take what is arguably the at least by number of people that that have been using it, Windows Media Center would be the big PC-based DVR application. Even that, the media extenders haven't succeeded. Pretty much, the Xbox 360 is the only Windows Media Center extender that's still in common use.
I mean, if you had a product like that, you basically would be competing directly with maybe DVR functionality that the cable companies provide. It's kind of a weird question when you think about it. What would be the advantage of doing something like that, you know?
Yeah, it's certainly keep an eye on things. It's a matter of being a clean, elegant, and useful, innovative product. It's hard to do well.
And I got one more from the Myth TV mailing users mailing list. Are there any plans for a DVB-S, DVB-S2, or DVB-T2 version of the HD Home Run Prime?
I'm going to have to slightly decline to answer that. We're certainly working on new products, but we're not in a position to talk about them yet, unfortunately.
Fair enough. Let me ask you, what are some of the other products do you guys have besides the HD Home Run?
So our main consumer products, HD Home Run being ATSC or DVB-T, DVB-TC, so DVB-T plus DVB-C. We have the Tech line of products, which are targeted for more commercial use, so schools, multicast video, more commercial applications. We are just about to release the HUNA 1U. So HUNA 1U, ATSC, ClearQuam, or DVB-T, DVB-C. There's a few things in the pipeline that are in the commercial space.
So the HD Home Run...
Can I go back to the site a second? When I'm looking at the channel listings here, how do I contribute back to that site listing? So if I go through and I see that the channels have changed or it's not quite as up to date for say my zip code as what I'm seeing say through my own Myth TV interface, how can I help contribute that back to the site?
Okay, it's a opt-in system whereby the home run unit, when it's not doing anything else, it's completely idle. It can connect to our server and feedback channel scan information. It's important to note that it's sending back what channels are available, not what channels you're watching. So it's completely it's giving information about what's on the cable system. That is done by setting the lineup location using Home Run Config. There's a actually on our Silicon Dust page, there's a link at the bottom called Privacy. That tells you the instructions for command lines, so for suitable for Linux, how to turn that feature on and off. It also describes exactly what's happening, what information is being sent back. So that's the first. That gives the server the ability to work out what channels are physically on the cable system, which are unencrypted. The backend server then does a real-time cross-correlation of channels. It's looking at the video of all the channels with a real-time correlation. So the idea is if there's a broadcast over the air where we know what the channel is because it has full virtual channel information from over the air, and we have that same channel on multiple cable companies, regardless of what frequency, regardless of what program number it is, we can match those channels by the video stream. And then, so we will then inherit the name from the over the air. Now, for cable-only channels, it relies on user feedback if there is no identifying information. Well, actually, if you have two different cable companies, one names it, one doesn't, then we can get the name from the other cable company because we can identify it's the same video stream. If it's completely unnamed on all cable systems, then it relies on user feedback. Right now, there are a XML-based interface to talk to our server, or it can be done with the Windows version of the Home Run software, HD Home Run setup under Windows. When you run the channel scanner, they're setting up channels for Quick TV. That gives you the ability to name channels, which then get fed back to the server if you've enabled that feature.
I'm going to look at that right now because I was not aware that it had the ability just to kind of phone home like that. Yeah. And I don't believe I ever enabled it.
Yep. I'll open up as well. I believe if you go to siliconduff.com or hdhomerun.com and click on the privacy link, it should be right at
the top. Yeah, I'm looking at the privacy link right now.
Privacy information. Okay, where it says Mac plus Linux, it's an online way to do it. We're setting a variable in the Home Run called lineup location. It's then a country code, which is a two-character country code. So for the US, it's US, colon, and then the zip code with no spaces or anything in it. For other countries, it's similar. It's a two-character ISO country code, colon, and then the postcode with no spaces or dashes.
So, Nick, how has the pre-order response been for the HD Home Run Prime? Have you guys gotten a lot of early orders, pre-orders?
We have, yes. That was... took our sales rep by surprise. We're certainly happy with how that's been going. And I think our... It's gone a long way to justify the pilot production size that we authorized. So yes, we're happy with how that's going.
Yeah, just reading, you know, I'm talking to different MITTV users. Everyone is really excited at the fact that, you know, we finally have access to cable card, and we'll be able to, you know, access a lot of channels with a cable card, you know, with a tuner. It's been a long time coming, you know.
Yeah. And, I was relaxing this afternoon. I was actually watching a series of recordings from my TV machine, which were from BBC America, that were recorded through the cable card unit. This is a MIPTV 0.24 standard. I think it's actually the latest fixes, but the standard MIPTV TV release.
So it'll work out of the box is what you're saying.
Yeah, one little trick you've got to do in order to get the get to pull the guide, the channel list from Schedules Direct, but that'll be fixed in 0.25, and there's a simple trick to make it work on 0.24.
I'm sure people get the word out about it.
Like if you've got, for digital tuners, normally you run a channel scan. For analog tuners, normally there's no channel scan. You get the list of channel numbers from when you get the guide data. This one, for the digital tuner, you want to get the list of channels from the guide data because it tunes by virtual channel number.
Yeah, with the HD Home Run, it was a bit of a pain with QAM to get it all mapped correctly and everything. You know, it would scan okay, and it would come back with, you know, it would populate the table with all the frequencies of the, you know, the unencrypted channels. But then you would have to go in and resolve all those channels. And it was a little bit of a bear to do that, you know. But once you had it all set up, it worked fine and everything. But it was a little bit of a pain. So you're saying with the HD Home Run Prime with the cable card, it should be a lot easier, is what you're saying.
There's no channel scan involved. The you click the or select the button for fetch channels from the guide. So it will download the list of channels to Schedule Direct. Then so there's no channel scan involved. It just means if you choose any particular channel, the virtual channel number gets sent to the Prime. The Prime tracks all the mappings to frequency program number, and then streams the channel. So very, very easy setup.
That sounds great. I can't wait to try it. You got me excited.
I can't wait.
The pre-order says the release date's the end of July.
Pat, yeah, I was telling Pat earlier that I have now two family members that each want me to build them a new machine. a Myth TV machine, and I'm telling them that this is the way that it's going to have to be done, so that, you know, first of all, it's going to be cheaper for them with using the cable card versus a box, and two, they'll be able to do the three recordings, they'll be able to see a lot of these channels, except for things like the, you know, the HBO and whatnot, which they don't have anyway. They'd be able to take advantage of all of this stuff in just one nice tiny little box, and it's gonna do all of their recordings and multiple recordings and all of that for them.
So Nick, what kind of setup do you have for your Myth TV setup? I guess, is this at home or is this in a lab at the office?
I'm running Myth TV at home. So setup consists of a high definition projector for the video display, the Linux machine, it's Ubuntu based, is sitting in a, in the chassis of a Cray. So it's a little bit of fun. Yes, I have a Cray in my living room.
Are you using that to heat your room, or it's just for aesthetics?
Heat the house? What are you talking about?
Unfortunately, didn't have any of the Cray drives or boards in it. It was just the chassis and all the wiring looms and house supplies and things. But it's a standard 90-inch rack, so it meant that I could mount the stereo and the a couple of 4U machines in there, of which one of them is the TV machine, which is running 24/7. It's got a nice Beta Ray running and the TV on top of that.
I think you'll have to post a picture of that to the Myth TV wiki.
It's about twice the size of a refrigerator being. It's probably 5 feet tall, 6 feet long, or 6 feet wide, and I guess, 3 feet deep. And weighs about 700 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
How does your significant other deal with that? How do they feel about that?
Well, amusingly, it hides all the wiring and all the... You know, normally there's a mess of cabling and things with equipment. Well, everything's all neatly hidden inside it. And same thing with the projector, then there's no wiring in the main living room where normally you'd have an entertainment system. So it actually hides things pretty well. Tucked neatly behind the sofa. So it towers over the sofa, but you get the idea.
Yeah,
one's mistaken that for a refrigerator to grab a beer.
A wine cooler.
It's got one of those great big red emergency stop buttons on the top. So, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I think the combination of the HD Home Run Prime and a Hoppog PVR 1212 should cover everything for me.
Yep, that's how I'm going to run as well. Actually, I'm going to have the HD Home Run hooked up, as well as the Prime, as well as the HD PVR.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to keep the HD Home Run.
I'm going to get all the bases.
Because I got a four-way splitter. It's all set up down here in the basement in the man cave. And I have a line coming in for my cable line, and I have a four-way splitter. So right now I have two of the splitter going to the HD Home Run. And I got one going to my router, because that's my internet connection, you know, the cable modem. So that one's going to the cable modem, and then I got the third one going to the cable box across the room. So I'm pretty tapped out. So if I'm going to do this, then I might have to retire the HD Home Run.
Yeah, I think I've got three Home Run units connected up. That are in active use. So one is connected to a TV antenna, so it's ATSC. So I get two channels. I've got the two channels of Clear Clam, which admittedly doesn't get much use now, because then the third is the Prime, which is running three channels on the TV.
So let me ask you, Nick, who's your cable provider, and how many channels do you have now with through the cable cord? What percentage can you record?
Comcast in the Bay Area. So Comcast in the Bay Area. And I believe the Myth TV machine gets every channel I'm subscribed to. I've got, I think it's a digital premium package. It's basically every channel before you start getting to the paper channel. And the TV will receive all of those. So it's when you get into HBO, Cinemax, Showtime channels that you have to pay for individually. Those are normally protected.
Right, and you can't do video on demand, I believe, with the cable companies, with the cable cards.
Right, yes. Yeah. Now, we do support Switch Digital Video. So if it's with a Comcast here doesn't use Switch Digital Video, SDV, but there are other cable companies that do. We do support Switch Digital Video that does work with MIFTV. The trick is you can throw the Home Run Prime in your wiring closet, throw the tuning adapter beside the Prime in your wiring closet, and then any computer for MIFTV, same principle, it just requests the virtual channel number. The Home Run Prime does all the interfacing to the tuning adapter and makes it work.
That's good to hear. Consequently, I hear that Time Warner, which is very, very big in New York City area, is one of the worst cable companies for encrypting everything. You pretty much won't be able to get anything from what I'm hearing. They're in a few other markets, too. Me and Dan are in eastern Pennsylvania, and we have RCN. And from what I looked at going through the service menus for the channels, it looks like pretty much close to what you have with Comcast in the Bay Area, for the most part. There's a few other channels that, for some reason, are encrypted and have the flag. So, but it sounds like I should be able to get a good percentage of them.
There's also, of course, Verizon Fios, which they seem pretty good in most markets. So Home Run Prime works with Verizon Fios, uses a standard Verizon Fios cable card, their lineup's pretty good as well.
That's good to hear that it works with them.
Yeah, that's great.
So are we going to hit the end of July for the release?
We think so, yes. Everything is ticking along quite nicely. I'm going to be traveling in about a week and a half, spending a few days in Asia to oversee how the production is going. Right now, everything is on target.
Excellent. This is good stuff. Nick, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking to us and giving us insight to the HD Home Run Prime and what it's going to do for MIT-TV users and also, you know, DVR users across the world, you know, different systems. But, you know, we're primarily concerned with MIT-TV. That's what we use. We love it. And we're glad, like, companies like Silicon does actually embrace the community and try to work with them as opposed to not working with them. It really makes a huge difference to us, and I think it really puts Silicon Dust in a really good light for most people. Thank you.
Well, thanks.
It's refreshing that you guys, you know, your approach.
Well, it really helps when you come home each day and all your all the TV recordings are sitting there, thanks to Smith TV. So it means I can go home and plan on doing QA.
Well, you're going to get a lot of QA. You're going to get a lot of feedback, both positive and negative, from the MIT-TV community. Once they get that thing fired up and set up, and I'm sure you'll be hearing positive and negatives. So I'm sure it'll be mostly positive.
We're on the MIT-TV bug track system, so we've got our support forums. We've got our trouble ticket system. There's some MIT-TV, IRC MIT-TV ticket system. We're on that system so that we can work directly with MIFTV devs, and if something needs fixing, we're on it.
Excellent. Do you happen to have a beta program that you can kind of, you know, help sign up to try these out to kind of flesh out some of the bugs and anything like that?
We don't, unfortunately.
Okay.
The units that will be that are. Units that we have now have all been allocated to mostly to cable companies and providers which are testing in their own labs. So we've had a number of cable companies contact us directly, which has tied up much of our what we have to work with. But certainly we'll be working hard to be responsive for. The initial release anything that, comes up with MythDB is officially supported from our point of view.
And it's really nice that you guys, you know, show the love to the Linux community in general. It's really great that you guys have MythDB prominent, and then it's part of your supported, you know, applications, and it really means a lot to the Linux community in general that you guys are doing this, and we thank you for it. Well, Nick, I think we're going to wrap up the show. We appreciate you calling in, talking to us, giving us your insights and the background on the HD Home Run Prime. We look forward to actually getting them in our on our hands and getting them hooked into our MITTV systems and getting them working. And I can't wait to check it out.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Really, really looking forward to it.
Well, best of luck, okay? We'll have to talk again in the future sometime. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Will do. Thanks for having me on the show.
Anytime. Cheers. Well, everybody, that was Nick. We appreciate him coming on. Dan, you have any final thoughts while we wrap up the show?
Just to kind of jump back a little bit to the beginning of the show, when you had talked about not upgrading yet, and in our time off, that was one thing that I had done. I had upgraded the operating system and the software to the latest Mythbuntu, and quite honestly, no issues whatsoever. I have not run into anything. That's a bit of a It's a bit of a misnomer there, but the one thing that I have noticed is that the HD home run, or I'm sorry, the HD PVR does seem to take a little bit longer time to change channels. So it almost looks like it doesn't lock on a channel. So I just want to kind of let that be known to people that are out there that are using that with the Ubuntu 11.04 release. But otherwise, you know, things are nice. Like periodically, you know, if you are somehow able to lock up the front end, it will respawn itself for you automatically. You don't have to go and either recycle, you know, the GDM or restart it or do anything like that. All in all, really happy with a lot of the improvements that they've made. Some of the menus kind of, you know, changed around a little bit and reorganized a little better. They also definitely look nicer. The way that they pop up. And how they're laid out, but otherwise, like I said, I've had no issues with the upgrade. The upgrade took all of, you know, 30 minutes, I think, for it to download everything and process through everything and go. So I have upgraded the OS. I'm still waiting to upgrade some hardware, but otherwise, really happy with how everything's been working, and so far it's been chugging along. You know, no problems, and this was an upgrade from, you know, 10.04 to 10.10 to 11.04. So I'm really happy with how it's all working out.
Yeah, I have a reason to not upgrade because the HD Home Run Prime, you know, since it's supported out of the box until 24.1. I got to get everything up to speed. So that's what I'm going to be doing, putting everything together and getting it all set up. So looking forward to it.
And I do run the bleeding ones that they post, the bleeding updates that they post out up there for the Mythbuntu repository.
You mean the update repo?
And like I said, I don't have any issues with that with my current, you know, hardware configuration running with that environment. So I would, you know, definitely recommend people to go ahead and do that.
Excellent. Well, everybody, we appreciate you taking the time to listen to the show. We apologize for not coming out with an episode sooner. But we hope to get back on track, and we'll see you real soon. Take care.
See you, Pat.